We are on the eighth week of our 9 weeks, and we are finally, you might say, focusing specifically on the senses. We've done a certain amount of preparation, all the material, all the reading and discussion we had about how a field gets set up is relevant to what we're doing now. But now we're going to look at it really in terms of sense experience. And I might say that for some people it's very natural to experience the world in terms of the senses. And for other people it's not. For me it takes a certain effort. I have to remind myself to tune in to sense experience. Of course, that's not always true. Sometimes sense experience is so beautiful or I suppose ugly or so striking in some form or another that it just grabs you. And sometimes if you're in a a natural setting or some other place where the body seems to be attuned to its surroundings, then I think sense experience is much more natural. But for me, and I think for a fair number of people, the senses kind of take a back seat to the steady activity of what you might call, the conceptual mind, let's say. The mind, I mean, the extreme of that mind is the one that's always busy thinking and calculating and judging and so on. But it's a mind that we all know about. It's the mind also that labels and identifies and assigns meaning. And all of those activities, as we saw when we were talking about the field, those are all activities that we engage in all the time. Nonetheless, there's this distinction. So some of you may feel, maybe very happy with working with the senses. Others of you may find it, may find that you have to kind of expand the range of possibilities. Caroline says, this is amazing for me to hear. Good, thank you. Thank you for being a conversational partner, I guess, as it is such a familiar world to me. What other modalities do people use to connect with their reality? What conditions both or all of these? Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that last sentence, but you're welcome to ask more, as to the first part, that's really what I was trying to speak to. I think some people spend their time, how shall I describe it, more kind of reacting to what they sense. It's like a second step. That might be a good way to think about it. So, you could say, well, after all, it seems as though everybody encounters the world through their senses, right? So that's common to all of us. But some people are very in tune with that initial engagement with the world, and other people are more focused on what we do in reaction to that initial engagement. The identifying, the judging, the evaluating, the comparing, what I call the conceptual mind. So Ari asks, is sense experience the same as bodily awareness? And Caroline says, it's bodily awareness is one dimension of touch. Well, that's a whole separate inquiry. I mean, I think that's a very interesting inquiry, but if people mean bodily awareness, the technical term for that is kinesthesia. And it's a sense of your body. It's different from touch, although it may involve a kind of an internal touch, but it's more a sense of your, your orientation in space and the feeling of the body moving. I think it's very central in a lot of sports and in dance. So that's one separate question. And then Caroline asks, well, so how do you predominate in one or another modality? Now, first of all, let me say that, you don't have to believe me just because I say that people have different modalities. But I'm about to give you some evidence, and it's something that I've that some of you have heard me talk about in the past, that I've found very interesting and helpful, exactly in regard to this kind of question. A friend of mine is a psychology professor at the University of Nevada. And he, many years ago, developed this method for investigating conscious experience, let's just say experience, that he's been using for years and years and years. And what he does is he gives people a beeper, like what we had before we had cell phones, those of you who use them. The beeper goes off at random, and he asks people to just write a couple of notes about what was happening in the moment right before the beep. And then within 24 hours, he interviews them about those beep experiences. And so the idea is that he's trying to get a very complete and undistorted record of what their experience is. And he spends some time training people to be able to report on their experience, because people in the beginning tend to report more on the level of what I was saying, more kind of judging their experience or what they were thinking about their experience, but they don't report their experience. So he trains them to report on their experience. And he's written several books, half a dozen books about this, and you can go look at them. If anybody wants to know his name, just check with me or Kathleen. I can send you the information. But the point is, one of the things that he discovers is that people's experience is really, really, really different, and that's my evidence, because I think he's put a lot of energy into kind of investigating the experience of other people. And we have this tendency to think that the way we experience the world is the way other people experience the world, and it just isn't true. And one of the things that he consistently says is, or one of the better way to put this, one of the kinds of experience that some of his subjects consistently report is very much sense experience. So if you beep someone like that, let's say 9 times out of 10, what they report is, oh, I was noticing the way the sun reflected off the sidewalk, or I was, noticing the breeze on my skin, something like that. Some people are very, very focused there. And then some people are very focused on something completely different. Let's say that same person is feels the breeze on their skin, but what's going on in their experience is they're thinking about how they have to buy a new jacket, or how their old jacket is worn out, or something like that. So that's the distinction I'm making, and I'm just saying that for some people, the connection to the senses is natural. That's kind of preliminary to what we really want to go into, but this is an important and interesting topic. Caroline is referring to Rinpoche's comment that there are 9 types of people, and she's asking about modalities of perception and whether it's related to that. I don't know. Rinpoche does say that, and he talks, or 9 types of consciousness, he also talks about that, and I've never heard him go into any more detail about that, so I'm not sure what that involves. But one easy way to think about it, one model that a lot of people are familiar with is the 4 types in that Jung speaks about, which are sensing and feeling and intuition and thinking. I believe that's right. And some people know that through Jung. Some people know it through the fact that it really has been taken up by kind of mainstream psychological testing. There's a test called the Myers-Briggs test, which is meant to determine what kind of person you are, and it's used, I mean, in on those four scales, and then there's the, you know, the introverted and the extroverted type, or the, yeah, I guess that's right. So you've got eight types in all, and that's considered to be very helpful in terms of management issues, personnel issues, for instance, because if you understand how someone approaches the world, you can interact with them differently. So that's all very useful and helpful to keep in mind. But we are all going to, at this point, focus in on the senses. And as I said, for some of you that's natural, and for some of you have to remind yourself that that's the focus of experience. Let's look at the very beginning of the chapter, page 392, and the first paragraphs. Rinpoche says, "The senses can be understood as the agents or ambassadors of knowledge." And he said something very similar in the previous chapter, actually. "Envoys who present their credentials in establishing the realm of what is known." So, okay, what does that mean? They establish the realm of what is known. Well, it just means that you see what's in front of you, you hear what's around you, you touch what you come in contact with. Those are the modalities that we have for identifying and interacting with the physical world. So right now we're focused on the physical senses. The mind is a sense, is something different. I mean, also considered a sense, certainly in Buddhist psychology. But for our purposes, really the physical senses. So the senses establish the realm of what is known, and in doing that, they are the agents of knowledge. And that's kind of self-evident. It's not a subtle point. Although we don't often think about it that way, the idea basically is that we have a kind of knowing capacity, right? We exercise or manifest awareness. We know what's going on in the world. We are awake. I got an email from my cousin last night, who is not interested in these kinds of issues at all. But I told her that I was going to be hosting a consciousness conference, and she said something like, "Well, I'm sure this is naive, but what is there to study about consciousness? I mean, either you're awake or you're asleep." And yeah, that was kind of naive, but in fact, that is probably the single most basic thing to say about consciousness. Maybe even more basic than that is you can say, well, to be a sentient being is to be conscious or aware. You know, we are aware in a way that rocks are not. But then, apart from that, you could say we're conscious when we're awake. We're not conscious when we're in deep sleep. Now, what about dreams? That's a whole different, you know, that's a topic on which you can have different opinions, and since you can have different opinions, people do have different opinions. But for our purpose, we can just say the point is that when the senses establish reality through their operation, they are agents of this knowing capacity, this ability we have to be aware or to experience. So, you know, seeing establishes the world that is seen, and it does that, you could say, and this is kind of the idea of being that the senses present their credentials. It does that every time we see something, we're also affirming that the vision has the capacity to see. The very fact that something shows up in the visual field is, you know, establishes the validity, the credentials of seeing as an agent of knowledge. That's what Rinpoche says here, and I think it's a nice image, but it's fairly simple. It's just an attempt to describe what goes on all the time, what we always know about. So that's the first sentence in that paragraph. But the second sentence in the paragraph is the one that gets to the heart of what we want to be looking at today and during the coming week. He says, within their activity of establishing, original intimacy remains open for discovery and appreciation. Okay, so in the orientation for this week, I got interested as I was writing it in intimacy, and as you know, I wrote some, I pulled out a number of quotes from three of the TSK books about intimacy, and I hope you had a chance to look at the quotes. Even if you didn't go back and look at the place in the various books, just looking at the quotes, you learn some interesting things about intimacy. And one of the things you learn is that it's important in the TSK vision. In one of the places that I quoted, stated as a kind of fundamental truth about our being, simply intimacy is, little scare quotes here. Sort of trying to put my finger somewhere so I can do scare quotes, but I can't figure out how to do that. Okay, intimacy is. The first sentence describes our ordinary experience. The senses establish the world with which we interact. The second sentence suggests that that's not the whole story. If it were, Rinpoche wouldn't have written the TSK books, I suppose. There's more than that, and one way to talk about that more, to talk about the possibilities that are available to us, is in terms of what he calls here original intimacy. So what does that mean? Well, I'm not sure how important it is to try to give a precise definition in words, because words are not the vehicle for intimacy. The senses potentially are. That's what Rinpoche is saying. But words are not. You don't discover intimacy through words. But you may get some clues about where to look. So we'll say a little bit about intimacy. Intimacy is when there is not a separation, basically. There's not that separation, you could say, between the one who knows, the one who's engaged in the sensing activity, and what is sensed. Instead of that separation, instead of, normally we talk about that in terms of subject and object, instead of that, you have the intimacy, and how else should we describe that? A sense of an immediacy of presence. Somebody's playing with their phone, but we'll just pretend that's not happening unless we want to make it the focus of an exercise. I don't think I do. Okay. Within their activity of establishing, original intimacy remains open for discovery and appreciation. So the distinction that's made here is there is the world that the senses establish. And that's not going to get us what very far. Once that world has been established, okay, interesting. Somebody's dialing in but is already online or something like that. But I'll try not to get too distracted by that. So within the activity of establishing, there is, no, I'm sorry, let me back up. So what's established is already established in terms of this separation between subject and object. I sense something, whether it's through seeing or hearing or touching or so on. That fundamental connection is there. And that connection, the nature of that connection, is such that it's also a separation. It does not engage this original intimacy. So how can we engage it? Well, the answer that Rinpoche gives in this sentence is we can tune in to the activity of establishing. Right? So we need to investigate what that is. And I want to say something about it, and then I want to have us practice with it. The senses establish a world. That's what Rinpoche says. But that's an activity, and instead of focusing on the product of that activity, the world that's been established, which is what we usually do, we can focus on the activity itself, the activity of establishing. So if I look, there's a wall in front of me, and if I look at the wall in front of me, I see a wall. But how does that wall get established if we're now focusing on the senses? Well, it gets established through the activity of seeing. I see the wall. And so we need to kind of ask ourselves and explore that for a moment. Is you know, one, what you might imagine, you say, well, the activity of seeing the wall is a one-time thing. You know, I see the wall and it's established, and then once it's established, it's there. But that's clearly not the case. And that's kind of a theoretical possibility, but it's clearly not the case. Because in order to see the wall, I have to keep seeing it. It's an ongoing activity. Right? So if I close my eyes, I no longer see the wall. Now, do I believe that the wall is there? Yes, I believe that the wall is there. Do I make certain assumptions about what would happen if I reached out and touched it? Yes, absolutely. But in terms of actually establishing the world of our experience, it's an ongoing activity. So you could say, you know, seeing and the other senses establish a world about which we can then have certain opinions and beliefs. Having seen the wall, then even if I close my eyes, I assume that the wall is still there, I assume that it's solid, I could make a lot of assumptions about the fact that it's been there a long time based on what I know about this building and so on. All of that is kind of on the conceptual level, but in terms of the world that we experience, in terms of the world that's established in that way, it's an ongoing activity. And that's really kind of a simple point, but it's the basic point that we want to explore here. Because what Rinpoche says is that it's within the activity of establishing that we can discover original intimacy. This point, I don't know if I need to say too much more about it right now. I'm kind of tempted, but I guess I won't. All that I want to say really is that sense activity, sense perception, is this activity, and that activity is an activity of knowledge, or as Rinpoche says at the top of page 393, and he puts this in italic, he says, the activity of the senses is activated as the embodiment of knowledge. To put it more directly, sense perception is an activity of the body of knowledge. So if we engage the establishing, the activity of establishing, that's where we find the knowledge that is going to transcend what we think we understand as individual selves. And that's where we're going to be able to, you could say, free ourselves from the assumptions and presuppositions of the field of knowing that's in operation. The way we understand things to be, the way things have been established to be. So it's a question of going from what's established to the act of establishing, and that's actually not a hard thing to do. Although a lot of our training kind of goes against it, you could say. I just wanted to try to do that now. So I gave the example a moment ago of looking at the wall. And the thing about an object like a wall or a lamp, I'm looking around the room that I'm in right now, the wall, the lamp, the printer, the computer, the painting on the wall, things like that. All of those things present themselves as being essentially static and unchanging. And that is very confusing in terms of what it is that we're trying to establish. Or what it, I shouldn't say it that way, should I? It's very confusing in terms of the possibility of going into the activity of sensing and establishing. Because, as I said, even though the wall presents itself as static, it only does that as an ongoing activity. I see it, I see it, I see it, I see it. You know, in every moment, that's what's going on. There's an activity of sensing going on. And there is a clear kind of dichotomy. We see it as something static, as something that has already been established, but in fact, it's an ongoing activity of establishing, made possible through or conducted by seeing. Now, static objects like walls is where that distinction is the strongest, the distinction between the ongoing activity and what has been established. The same distinction operates, let's say, if I hear something, right? But it's not as strong because when I hear something, the sound varies. I mean, it might be a steady sound, so you know, there are various possibilities. But you know, if I'm listening to music, let's say, it's constantly changing, it's constantly in transformation. So the hearing is very, it's much more obvious that in hearing there is a steady activity of establishing because things are changing from moment to moment. But, and music is not the best example here because sometimes music takes us out of that mode of everything already being established and into the original intimacy, or at least toward that original intimacy. But any kind of hearing, in any kind of hearing, there's still the aspect of it which establishes. And what I mean by that is, if I am listening to a bird singing, let's say, there is the changing perception of the sound of the bird, but there is a constant throughout that, which is, that's a bird that's singing, right? And that is established by the hearing, by the sense of hearing. And what we would like to do if we're doing in doing this practice, and in following Rinpoche's suggestion here, is not to go with what's established, namely the bird, but with the ongoing activity of establishing. Even if, in fact, you could say what's established from moment to moment is that's a bird that's singing, right? But it's still an ongoing activity of establishing. And we know that as far as the sound is concerned, but we refer it back to a particular identified entity, which is the bird that's doing the singing. Okay, I think I probably talked that into the ground. What I'd like to do is have us practice now for a few minutes. And I'd actually like you to start by looking at an object that is static, because, as I say, that's the easiest place to see the distinction that we're talking about. So take a look at an object, pick any object in your field of vision, and then you can switch to another one if you like. And instead of seeing the established identity of what is presented to seeing, see if you can engage the ongoing activity of seeing, which from moment to moment brings with it this particular seen object. So we're looking at the event, you might say, or the process of seeing, rather than what the product of what's presented. And we'll do this for a few minutes, maybe 4 or 5 minutes. And if you like, after you've worked with a static object like that, you could move on to a moving object, or you could move on to hearing, or you could move on to sensing. Let the exercise unfold any way you like, but that's what we'll do for the next several minutes. Okay. Okay, let's come back together and we can share what came up there. So Sudaba has a couple of comments already. So the first one, she says, pulsing with data gathering activity. And pulsing is an interesting word there because it suggests something about intimacy and about the rhythms of time. Pulsing with data gathering activity, this thing I call self. So, Tsuruba, you're taking it kind of in the direction of the one who claims ownership of the senses, which is an important place to look because it's true that the senses not only establish the object of the senses, but the self as the one who is having the sense experience, right? So if you focus on the senses, that there is this more this sense of data gathering activity, and actually it's a good point because when I was describing this and I said the wall is being established, Rinpoche in the previous chapter when he talks about the operation of the senses, he talks about the outward trajectory of the senses. And Sudaba's point goes more toward that. So, yes, the question of data is interesting. I won't try to say any more about it because we have several other comments. So Sudaba goes on to say, okay, I think this is a nice description. I'll just read it. How often, though, I do not notice this subliminal happening, and instead am surfing on the surface of the summaries of what has been the outcome of thousands of pulsations in from different fields, seeing, hearing, minding, and judging. It is a careful practice to heed the underlying weaving of the tapestry of the known. Well, that's very nice. All right. There is a kind of, I think that very much points in the direction of intimacy. So Caroline says, so there's this identification. Although I identify computer mouse or car outside or blackbird singing or plant waving in chimney over the road, it actually all felt like a subtle fizzing happening in here. It's as though out there is actually encompassed by or inferred by in here. Well, that's interesting too. Of course, I find all of these things interesting. I'm not a good judge. But they are, it seems to be, intrinsically interesting because when you look at your experience, you are already in a domain that is naturally of great interest because it goes beyond what our usual experience is all about. So, Caroline, you're saying it felt like a subtle fizzing happening in here, as though out there is actually encompassed by or inferred by in here. That's related to the comment I made about Sudaba's first post, which is that it's a whole, it's an organic whole. The experience that the senses give us in establishing the way things are, in establishing reality, establishes the whole of reality. And that's one thing that's a little bit misleading, perhaps, although I think it's okay, but it's misleading if you say, well, you look at the wall or you listen to the blackbird. And you say, well, that's what the senses are giving us, right? My sense of vision is giving me the wall. My sense of hearing is giving me the blackbird. But whatever a particular sense is presenting, whatever data is flowing in, it's data that's given to us as part of a larger whole, as part of a reality. And I think that may be part of what you're pointing to, Caroline, when you say what's out there is encompassed by or inferred by in here. And that's definitely one thing to look at in sense experience. And one way to think about that is that if I look at the telephone, let's get away from the wall for a moment. If I look at the telephone, my seeing the telephone is part of a larger field in which it makes sense that there are objects, right? And that is a that's an important place to look. So I'm going to suggest that during the week now, you do this practice. And I think a nice way to do it is actually just in walking around. And when you're walking around, there is a sense that you're moving in or part of a field. And I think that's a good way in, even though it's the particular senses that give you the content of the field. Each one of them also carries the message that the field is in operation. So Karin says in her post, describing her experience, thoughts and names, breath, effort to stay with the object, richness, intensity, breath. Well, I like that. I like that description, Karin, because it's going with the idea that from moment to moment there's an activity of establishing, and what's being established from moment to moment is variable. We like to think that we inhabit a fairly static world, but in fact things change from moment to moment, and recognizing that leads to the quality of richness and intensity that you point to. Okay, well, we'll stop there for today, but that's the practice for the week. There is a whole other practice which maybe I'll point to in the orientation that is suggested in this chapter. Maybe I'll try to link the two together. But the basic idea here really is given in that second sentence of the first paragraph, within their activity of establishing, within the senses' activity of establishing, original intimacy remains open for discovery and appreciation. So the key word, I suppose, in that sentence is, well, they're all key. The activity of establishing. I was going to say establishing is the key word because it points toward the activity. Let's leave it at that. So next week, our last class, but we have a lot of interesting material to work with during the week. See you next week.